It's Charlotte Soccer Show. John Hayes. I'm joined by my very good friend, Danny Bramsey. He's back on the show. He's back from his trip down into the state of Texas. Everything's bigger in Texas, Danny. How was your weekend traveling to Dallas and then Austin and seeing a 2-2 draw? An exciting 2-2 draw, to say the least, on Saturday against... What does Austin call themselves?
Los Verdes.
Los Verdes.
Yeah, the greens. Yeah, green and black. So I wore some green and black myself, slightly better, prettier shade of green with the mint. This is my torn and tattered mint kit. Been through the battles with this one. And Johnny, everything is bigger in Texas, including the wine glasses. I took a picture of this. I didn't prepare it for the show, but there's like a giant wine glass that I had at dinner and filled that thing to the brim and took it down, probably about a third of the bottle. It was a great trip and really happy to be here with you to discuss it. You and Brackett did a really good sort of road recap episode and feed earlier this week. I really enjoyed listening to that as I made my way home. And I just wanted to get fire up the old streamer again here to talk about some road stories, maybe dig into, you know, what went on around the game a little bit more than the game itself, because I think you guys did cover that well. I do think the draw, you called it a draw that felt like a draw, and I agree. I know there was some pushback on that from the people that thought we should have got the win, but it's a comeback draw. We gave up the first goal and then were able to hold off for 2-2. And we also had to, like, we were under the cosh right at the end, and Andrew Privet made like a goal-saving tackle like right near stoppage time. So I felt pretty happy with the draw. It would have been great to get the 7 points, but 5 points on that trip was nice.
It was. There's no doubt about it. And just to follow up on that, since you brought it up, you know, I think that you can't have one without the other. If you felt like it was a draw that felt like a loss, then there's one person who should be circled, and it's Karol Swiderski. Your DP striker misses two big chances, and you draw. So you can't say it felt like a loss without being critical of Karol Swiderski. If you want to say that you're happy that Karol's back and that he played well and that he took his chance at the PK spot, then you should be satisfied with the draw. That's kind of where I stand on it. I think that makes sense to me. A plus B equals C.
Right. They kind of go hand in hand there, those two concepts.
Yeah, they do. But then again, you said we're not going to necessarily talk about the match, I think, from an X's and O point of view. We certainly can if you want. But I think people are interested in hearing about your travels, kind of what it was like going to that stadium. I think this is the fourth year of Austin FC?
They start the year before us, yep.
So the fourth year of Austin FC, I think you can make a comparison. Hey, Danny, how'd they get a soccer-specific stadium, and how does that compare to Bank of America Stadium when you're in the building?
Well, the Q2 Stadium was awesome. It was forgive me there. The Q2 Stadium was awesome. It is a soccer-specific stadium. It's built kind of right into this awesome neighborhood in North Austin, and it's the type of place where you walk in and you go down to the lower bowl seats or up to the upper bowl. So it's not too tall. It has a sort of a nice profile. It's sort of sunken into the hilly neighborhoods of North Austin, and it's a dream. I knew I was going on this trip from the very beginning of the season. As soon as the schedule was announced, I didn't grow up in Austin, but I lived in Austin for 7 years. I moved to Charlotte from Austin. I love Austin. I still have family and great friends there. And I'm making a whole weekend out of this. This is going to be great. I went down, stayed with my brother. We had a big old, we had a great happy hour at Billy's on Burnett. If you ever go to Austin, make sure you go to Billy's on Burnett, the happiest hour, as they call it. And we had a good time reconnecting with some old friends. And I brought some new friends. Our buddy, tremendous friend of the show, Greg Franco, made the trip, and about hundreds of Charlotte fans made the trip. Greg and I were traveling mostly together, although he was staying at a hotel, not my brother's house. My sister-in-law put the kibosh on that one, you know, so he had to, but makes sense. But we had a great backyard barbecue, like I said, the next day before the game. Our pregame party was basically in my brother's backyard. He has a pool, a putting green, a little cabana. Had a big barbecue catering. And so we started the day off right. We were having putting contests. People were jumping in the pool. It was incredible. And had a good old time. It was the perfect way to get in the mood. I actually drank so much of the barbecue that I stopped drinking by the time the game kicked off, because I was like, I'm done. I'm good. I'm cooked. Like, I one thing I've learned in my old age is to know exactly when you hit that spot and you don't need to drink anymore. My brother, unfortunately, did not know that his limitations. He ended up continuing to get sauced and soused and by the end of the night, he was way past toasty. I was in that nice, perfect toasty zone, having a good old time. And like I said, I knew I was going to go to this game, so I started looking at tickets. I bought my tickets back in February, and I got front row tickets. I was right in the very front row, section 129, about halfway between the midfield circle and the goalkeeper's box. It was absolutely tremendous. It was a great place to view the game. And we were sort of, so the official traveling support was in section 228, basically right above us. And it was cool to hear their chant. You know, it was, there was times when you could hear the Charlotte FC chants, you know, sort of ringing out. Being in proximity, I think, helped. I'm not sure if you could have heard them on the other side of the stadium. But I always, you know, it's always great to go with the traveling big support. But there's nothing quite like experiencing a game from, like, where you want to sit. And I wanted to be front row, front and center where I could. And so I was really happy to get those tickets and have a great old time. I was right by where players, when they – a few players, when Charlotte players would sub out, they would walk right past. So I would be able to give a little salute and stuff like that. Kerwin walked by. When he subbed out, he was really pissed, and he didn't show much recognition when I tried to give him some love. But Bronny Bro, when he subbed out, it was he had a little moment. Bronny and I shared a little moment, one of many moments that he and I have shared, at least in my mind, over recent years. And he made eye contact. I said, "Bronny, you're the motor. You're the engine of this team, man. You're killing it." And he gave me a little nod of recognition. So that was cool to see. And then after the match, when they came up, Bronny and Tiger Smalls came over to talk to some fans, and my brother Gabe, he's awesome guy. This was his first ever Charlotte FC match. He's been to a couple of Austin matches, but you see him there. I gave him my blue Charlotte FC t-shirt that you can see him on this picture that we're showing here on the YouTube screen. And he was so impressed by Bronny. He was just blown away by Bronico as far as being a motor, being an engine, being someone who was driving all the action. And he's like, "I don't know a lot about soccer, but I know that this guy is making a major impact on the field." And I was like, "You're right, man. You're right, bro. He's awesome." And everyone's talking about the great ball that Westwood served up to Tavares for that go-ahead goal at the time. And it was a great ball, but that you got to give credit. That goal was the catalyst, the creator of that goal was really Bronny, because he was working against two guys on the sideline in a tight spot, won a throw-in, immediately took the throw-in very quickly to Westwood. And Westwood sent it in, and it was a go-ahead goal. It was awesome. I thought Austin's first goal was close to being offside. Didn't get much of a VAR check. Looked offside to me in the moment, but whatever. I haven't heard. Dino probably thought it was offside too, because he thinks every goal against us is offside. But just an absolute wonderful experience to be that close. The game is so much faster when you're up that close. And I'm talking about being up front, I'm not trying to brag. These tickets were $50 each. It's not like I'm some big spender. Like, you buy early, buy cheap, I think, is a good mantra in life. And so by purchasing these tickets in February, before people really knew what kind of a team Charlotte FC was going to be as far as an exciting match, I got two front row seats for $50 each. You're not going to get much better seats at Bank of America for that kind of price. And it was absolutely fantastic. And we're right there, you know. That's the thing of the soccer-specific stadium is when you're in the front row, you're right there on the sideline, you know. Like, if you're sitting up front at BOA, you know, you're still kind of, unless you're in the vault, you're still kind of, you know, detached. You're behind the benches and things like that. So all in all, an excellent experience. Happy with the draw. Wish we could have got the win. Great to see some goals. Great to see, like, by the end of the game, it was end-to-end stuff. There was just chance here, chance there, chance here, chance there. I don't know how it played on TV, but in the stands, we were absolutely loving it, Johnny.
Well, I really appreciate you talking about just kind of sitting up close and watching the speed of the game, because I think that's something that, you know, we really try to do on Charlotte Soccer Show is dissect and analyze the performance of players through the speed of the game. And I think a good example of this is, you know, when you sit up close, I think, like, something, I'll use an example of something that you can see that you might not necessarily, like, notice on TV, because you're just unable to kind of gain the same perspective about how delicate and how professional and how classy a player's touch needs to be throughout the game when we are playing at 100 miles an hour at the top professional level in America. Like, when you sit in the first row, you can tell that there's some players at SportsLink who play 7-on-7 soccer who are better on the ball than somebody like Enzo Capetti, right? Where if you see Enzo Capetti up close and personal in a 100-mile-an-hour game, his touch is just horrible. And it's really hard to put that into perspective when you're watching on TV or you're up in the club level or you're just many rows away from the field. Up close and personal, you can just tell how poor some of the touches are. And you're going to see a lot of poor touches in MLS. You certainly are. You know, did you notice anyone, Danny? Did anybody stand out to you as far as playing poorly on either side of the ball?
So Austin was without their best player, and they were playing some guys. I try to like be well aware of who's who in MLS, but Austin's lineup was kind of a little bit of a backup lineup, which did help us. They were missing a starting center back and a starting DP attacker. I'm trying to think. I'll be honest, and I hate to harp on this guy. I hate to harp on this young man, because we have said protect this man at all costs, and like we mean it when we say it. We're not trying to like have it both ways here, but Kerwin Vargas has kind of regressed a little bit, and he's really having a hard time making an impact. He scored some goals for this club, but all his most recent goals have all been like header goals off set pieces, which is not the type of goals you expect from Kerwin. His touch has been letting him down a lot recently, and also his power, like when he tries to serve a ball in from the wing, it's too strong. When he tries to shoot, it goes over the bar. So it's almost like he's over trying too hard. He's like trying to show that he is one of the best players, and it's like, just do what you want to do. Just be yourself and let your talent speak for itself. I feel like he's over trying, and I think that showed against Austin. He was one of the first subs to come out of the match, and like I said, I tried to give him some love, and you know, he didn't really acknowledge it because he was talking to a coach and holding his head down. He didn't really like his game that much, I don't think. And I like Kerwin. I think he's a big part of the future of this club, but he needs to just like take it down a little bit, because he's the guy that I would have to single out for playing kind of poorly for Charlotte FC, and it's that nature of touches and power and ability to measure, you know, the strength and the weight of what he's doing, for sure.
Well, I'm glad that you said protect Kerwin Vargas at all costs, because I think you can underscore here that could mean protect Kerwin Vargas from himself. And what do I mean by that? I mean, here you have a young player who clearly plays with a ton of emotion on his sleeve, somebody that gets unbelievably high, and somebody that also gets unbelievably low. When you remember back to the missed PK and him holding his head down, walking off the field of the first match of the season, you mentioned it as well here in Austin. He's walking off the field with his head down. Kerwin Vargas is an emotional player. And I think what Dean Smith and the staff need to do is figure out a way to, instead of, you know, seeing Kerwin Vargas's game be so volatile, so many ups, so many downs, they need to figure out a way to get Kerwin Vargas on that straight line, right? In that area where he's confident. He understands that there's going to be some touches that get away from him, that he's going to miss the frame, but ultimately he's going to get the chance to go back out there and achieve what he wants to achieve. So I think at this point, for me, protecting Kerwin Vargas at all cost means protecting Kerwin Vargas from himself, from being a young, inexperienced player at a professional level. And if that means some time on the bench, so be it, because I think a player like him needs to learn and understand that sometimes poor play has consequences. And with Yuri Tavares playing well, Kerwin has somebody potentially trying to take his spot in the starting 11.
For sure, because as much as I personally would love to see Carroll out on that left wing while Abad is gone, and Kerwin over on the right and Patrick starting up top, that's not going to happen. Dino has made it very clear that Carroll is going to be a striker, and that's going to relegate Patrick Ojemong to the sub role for now. And so that means the left wing, right wing situation is wide open. And right now, Abad is gone, so you could put Kerwin on the right and Yuri on the left, and that's fine. But when Abad comes back in a week and a half or so, what do you do? Because you're not really going to bench Leal Abad. You're paying him too much. I don't know exactly Kerwin's salary, but he did get the contract extension. But for me, right now, I'd take Yuri Tavares on the left over Kerwin Vargas, and we'll see. I think training can change that a lot, stuff that we don't always get to see. But as far as the results on the field, Tavares is delivering, and it's not that Kerwin's not scoring goals. He has scored goals, but they're just not the type of goals that you expect your left winger to score. They're headers in the box off set pieces, which is great. We love that, those contributions. They've been big. But like, to be what he really can be, to show his talent and his game, I don't think that we want to rely on Kerwin headers in the box off of set pieces.
Just to demonstrate what we're talking about with numbers, Kerwin Vargas was a 6.7, and Yuri Tavares was an 8.4 based on SofaScore match ratings on Saturday in Austin. Hey, another question for you, being there, kind of understanding the vibe. When you see the match details and you realize that Charlotte FC gives up a goal in the 11th minute, what was the vibe in the stadium at that point? And how did the players react on the field to going down on the road? And what did you see from the coaching staff? Anything different?
I saw, first off, the Austin fans are great. I got to shout out the Austin fans because, A, they treated us really well. A lot of Austin supporters groups welcomed Charlotte FC supporters groups. They welcomed Charlotte FC non-SG fans. And there's a bar called Hop Square, you know, kind of like we love to party at Hop Fly. This is Hop Square is a great little brewery up about, you know, four blocks from the stadium at Q2. We started our pre-party at the backyard barbecue, like I said, but then we went to Hop Square, took the lift. It was way too toasty to be driving, even though I do know the Austin roads very well. And it was great. Met some fellow Tifos there. Met April Sandoval, our West Coast Tifos auxiliary president. She and her family were there. It was great to see her again. And everyone around Austin was being cool with us and welcoming and saying, "Hell, you know, giving beer recommendations, like, oh, you know, try the Mexican lager. It's really good," and stuff like that. So, and you know, it doesn't take much to talk me into some Mexican lager. When Austin scored, I really liked the reaction of their fans. I mean, I had to give them credit. You know, everyone was really locked into the match. They knew what was going on. And I was a good friend of mine. Shout out to my buddy, Bo Garrison. He was sitting a couple rows behind me. And as soon as the goal went in, I looked up, I yelled at Bo. And I was like, "It looked offside to me, Bo." And he goes, "Ah, it looked pretty good to me." And just like, there was a lot of friendly banter and things like that. And you got to love that. Like, soccer is so much fun when the banter is elevated and chippy and you know, back and forth, but not mean-spirited. And I think that we really captured that with Austin. I think anyone should, like, really, I don't know when Charlotte FC is ever going to go back to Austin because they're not a regular opponent. It's kind of luck of the draw which West Coast teams we face and then whether we're home or away. But, like, man, do not miss the trip to Austin next time. That's the one piece of advice I can advise any Tifos. As far as our team's reaction, it was stoic, and it was okay, time to go to work. No heads were hung. Dino was locked in, and I was telling my brother was kind of, he wore the Charlotte shirt that I loaned him, but he was kind of cheering for Austin just because he's from there. He was kind of, you know, riding that middle line, and I was like, a lot of soccer left. I just kept saying, like, a lot of soccer. They scored so quick. I was like, hey, there's a lot of soccer left. We're going to score again. And I think you saw that with us continuing to press, continuing to get attacks. You saw Yuri go down and draw that PK. Let's play. I'm going to play. From my vantage point, I was able to get a really nice look at Karol Swiderski's PK. You know, it's nice when you know a PK is coming. Tavares drew it, like I said, and Karol instantly went over and grabbed that ball. And I would say the word I want to use mostly is resolute. Just like everybody knew what to do. And like you can see the guys, like, look at, I think that's Adilson right there, like telling Diani, like, hey, after the kick, you need to go here, you need to go there. It's just like, everyone's doing their thing. Like, yes, the focus is on Karol about to take this PK, but I love the way that the team is, like, planning for any eventuality, seeing what could happen. And then Karol just steps up and slots it home. You can see, so that is the Austin supporter section that we're looking at that he was shooting into. You can see those tubas. And they call their main group is called La Murga, the Murga Verdes, I guess you would call them. And they weren't too happy to see Karol slot that thing home, but Karol was pretty happy. There's some fellow Tifos. These guys were sitting like just the next section over from me, so I had to get them in the video, having a good time. And we were all just having a good old time, you know, like it was just a good vibe, big things happening. And I think that showed in the way that we went and then got the second goal and took the lead in the second half, you know, because Bronny never stopped fighting. I shouted him out earlier and I'll shout him out again because I was just so impressed. Like when he won that throw and I was like, oh, something good is about to happen. And then he throws it to Westwood and Westwood serves it up. So It was just awesome. And then the other thing I have to say, as disappointing as it was that Austin was able to equalize and tie the match, I have to give a shout out to like their game day presentation because in the first Austin goal, the sun had not set yet, so it was still light out, and there wasn't, and so some fireworks went off, but they didn't do the full presentation, which was when they scored their equalizer, it was dark. The sun had gone down by then, and it was dark. And they, as soon as their second goal went in the net, all the lights go out in the stadium, and it's just pitch black for a second, and then everything comes up like this dark green, and there's just this green glow and haze across the entire interior of the stadium, and then the fireworks go off, and it's like, it showed me the power of what a soccer-specific stadium can do as far as, like, yes, I'm not, no slight, like, we do our best at Bank of America. We have a great atmosphere. We've been lauded across the league for our great atmosphere. It's not downplaying the Charlotte FC atmosphere, but you got to give credit where credit's due, and, like, it was, like, electric what they were able to do with those green lights and everyone just, like, going nuts. Again, I hated to see it because I was cheering for Charlotte to get 3 points, but I have to give some love to what they were able to show with that everything goes pitch black, and then it comes back like dark green, and just like it's almost like you're in like a fantasy land or something like that. Like it's very mystical, and absolutely loved it. If I had been cheering for Austin, I really would have loved it. And it's a hopeless dream to think we'd ever get a soccer specific stadium here in Charlotte, because we all know the dynamics of why Charlotte FC exists is to sell tickets at Bank of America when it's not NFL season. So we don't need to get too into that, but you know, it's nice to have a little dream about it for someday.
Yeah, just it's fun. I've been to, I guess, DC United, Audi Fields, soccer specific stadium. I thought that was interesting, but there's a way to make Bank of America Stadium feel more like a soccer stadium. I think a lot of people have talked about whether it be putting curtains upstairs or putting tarps over the seats and maybe putting our brand logos up there, Charlotte FC's brand logos I'm talking about, for those away matches like they do at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. And they do that pretty well at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for Atlanta United. I think in the past, I don't know what they do for Seattle Sounders anymore, as far as they used to put tarps over the empty seats and put the brand logos on there at, I don't know what that field is called now.
Lumen Field, I think, although it changes all the time, so it could be outdated.
Yeah, that has changed, hasn't it?
Seahawks Stadium, we'll just call it.
But
yeah, and I'm not slighting our game day presentation or anything like that. It's fantastic, but just like it's a little slightly different feel in a soccer specific.
Yeah, no, I respect that, and I think like hearing you talk about that, I think there's a lot of people. You know, it's funny because there's a lot of people that listen to our show that participate in Charlotte FC fandom and really care about those sort of things. Like they want to have the best supporters section. They want to have the best game day experience, and those things really matter. To me, the only thing that matters is the performance on the field, because the performance on the field typically leads to good environment when it comes to professional sports. I mean, you can think about, you know, looking at Atlanta United, for example, they're getting about 342 people into the stadium right now because they're absolutely horrible this season, despite that being one of the best stadiums in the world. People aren't going to go if the product is bad. And that same thing will happen with Charlotte FC. Don't kid yourself for a fucking second that Charlotte FC and any other professional sporting franchise has to deal with that same reality. That results on the field lead typically to good atmospheres in the building.
Yeah, and we can and will and have poked plenty of fun at Atlanta for their attendance taking an absolute nosedive this season. It's really, really sad and pathetic. But it's also a cautionary tale for what can happen at Charlotte FC, because it was not too long ago that Atlanta was winning MLS Cup and drawing record crowds and filling that place and getting plaudits all around the league for their atmosphere. And now they're kind of a punchline. But like that could happen to us if we're not careful, if we don't keep up the results and Dino being at the wheel and all that. I do want to say, just to give, you know, I've been highly positive about Austin and everything they did. I'll say one thing that they could have been better at, which was right shortly before we scored our go-ahead goal, shortly before, you know, Westwood to Tavares happened, their supporters section with all their horns and everything and drums, they did Peppas. They played, you know, with their tubas and all that. And I was like, guys, y'all are playing our song. Like, what the hell is going on? And like the Crowns Up and Away folks who were sitting in section 228 actually turned around and like did a little mini pause there for a couple seconds. Like you can't play the other teams like official song, like not official, but just like, and other clubs around the league do. I think Pepas, I think Vancouver plays that as their goal scoring song. They play it when they score goals. So it's not like we have rights to it, but like we've kind of claimed that song as our own, at least for a hype song, a pregame hype song. And it was not shortly after they got done playing that in their section that we scored an equal go-ahead goal. So
know your
opponents a little bit better.
I'll give you a harsh bit of reality, and I'll give the rest of the TIFOs a harsh bit of reality as well. The only group of people that thinks Pepas is Charlotte FC's song is Charlotte FC supporters.
Okay? That's true.
Like, Pepas was a song that has been used at soccer stadiums long before Charlotte FC. Okay, so let's just be real about that for a second. Like, I've heard that many times right now, and I'm finally raising my hand and saying, hey, like, this song was being played and has been played at soccer arenas across the world before it was used at Charlotte FC. The Pepas and the Poznan are both things that were taken from other places and are used in Charlotte. So
that's fair.
Let's not pat ourselves on the back too hard here for having a song that everybody else was using.
I'm just saying that, you know, that's our pregame song and we scored a goal right after Austin played it. But I do understand what you're saying. I think it's true that like a lot of the chants that we do, you know, are standard chants that are done around the league and around the world, you know, that's, you know, every club does that. Every club does, you know, half the chants we use are not Charlotte.
It's just football culture is what it is.
Yes,
right?
Exactly.
And then that's why we're talking about Austin and the experience there, is because you can experience football culture at many different levels, not just in the United States, but in Mexico, clearly with the League's Cup coming up. There's football culture, and we're going to see a lot of fans of big Mexican clubs come to the United States here over the next month and show their football culture. And you're going to hear their chants, and you're going to hear the way that they bring their voice into these stadiums as well. And I think it's something to be celebrated. I think this idea that somebody has to be better than the other is purely fan banter. I'm here for it, though. I'm here for some fan banter.
We love a little banter, yeah.
That's a really, really good thing. But as far as football and culture is concerned, I think Charlotte FC has certainly laid the foundation of having a really strong footballing foundation from a culture point of view, and I'm excited about that.
And it's a great segue, Johnny, because we do want to talk a little bit about the League's Cup coming up here just briefly. I mean, again, you and Brackett kind of covered it pretty well.
If I could just finish making that point real quick, what I was trying to say is like the one thing that I think Charlotte FC should and supporters should hang their hat on when it comes to football and culture, and I mean this sincerely, and I think it's important to say, as we're discussing your road trip to Austin to see this match, based on what I've seen at Bank of America Stadium, based on the away support that I've seen in that building, I would venture to say that Charlotte FC's away support is probably top five in the league.
I'm with you 100%. And I think that there was like 350 Crowns Up and Away tickets were sold for Austin or given away by the club. And I figured there's at least another 150. I think we easily had 500 people in Charlotte FC gear in that stadium. And that was shown. I mean, look at Dean Smith at the end of the match. He walked over. He made sure to give his support. He was giving a lot of love to the traveling supporters. Dino knows what it's all about, and he wasn't going to walk away. He wasn't going to walk off that field without showing some love, and it felt really good. You know, one thing about Dean is at the end of the match, when Austin was really putting us under pressure and they were really pushing to try to get a go-ahead winner in the final minutes, and Dean was so – I looked over at him at the sideline. Austin got a corner kick, and I was like, I'm not even going to watch this corner kick, the actual action. I'm just going to watch Dean's reaction to this corner kick. And so I look over at Dean, and it was actually a really good chance for Austin that just went over the bar. And I hear everyone in the stadium go, oh! And Dean was just, like, stoic, locked in. He never reacted. He never, like, flipped out. Whether the ball had gone in or out, I think Dean was just going to be Dean. And I think that's – That told me, like, that's why we are so much better this year with a record of not conceding late and things like that, is because Dino's at the wheel, you know, and it's a beautiful thing. And
well, if you were going to give advice to somebody who was traveling for a Charlotte FC away game for the rest of the season, what advice would you give?
I would say, sit where you want to sit. It's great to like sit with the traveling supporters. Obviously that's a good time, but like sit where you want to sit. I would not have traded that experience that I had where I was sitting for anything. I think the people that were sort of in the section next to me would say the same thing. They were nice folks. I would say go early, get in. I got in a little later than I wanted because my brother was stuck. We had one last beer at Hop Square. We probably should have been walking down, should have walked down with April and her family when they left. So we were a little bit, you never know. So when we got to the stadium, there was a long line to get in. And I thought I could just walk right in like at BOA. So you never know like what the get in situation is going to be. So I would say, don't push the limits, which I did, and to my detriment. I missed like the first minute of action on the field. I was still walking on my seat. So that's on me. But, and then I would say, you know, have a good time and just be willing to embrace, like give the enemy, like the whichever club you're going to visit, give them the benefit of the doubt. Like I could have walked in there and been all like, all belligerent, like, oh, we're going to get you guys, Austin FC. We're going to, you know, F you, F that, you know, that's don't be like that. Just go in and like be embracing of football culture, just like the joy of it. And that will come back to you in spades for sure. But
That's great advice. And I think it's important because I think it depends on where you go and support from an away point of view, right? Like things can get maybe a little dicey. Things can get a little bit aggressive. People are, you know, running their mouths, talking shit. And that can lead to bad things. But I think that's great advice. And I've been to a couple away matches, and I know that you have as well, and many people have who have listened to this show. But I think like trying to engage the away fans and just have a chat and enjoy their company is probably the better way to go about it than being an antagonist, if you will.
Make friends, not enemies. It's just generally good advice for life, especially in this the way the world is these days. You can never have too many friends.
I'm glad you had a great trip. I'm glad Gabe is now an honorary Charlotte FC supporter and maybe ultimately a new Charlotte FC supporter after getting to meet Grant Bronico, somebody that this community here in Charlotte absolutely loves, and getting to see, really getting a firsthand experience of watching Charlotte FC with somebody like yourself who knows the club inside and out. So it's almost like you were his Sherpa watching that match. And when you're with somebody who knows a team and knows a game so well, it typically can enhance the experience for somebody who's hanging out with you for the first time.
Yeah, come on up the mountain with me, baby. You'll love the climb for sure. So what do you think of Leagues Cup? We got some press conference talk from Dean Smith and Ashley Westwood today, and we don't have to go super deep into it. We're about 36 hours from kickoff as we record this, so it's not going to live that long, but I hopefully this is an episode that people can just go back and listen to on any kind of away day road trip, because it stuff we talked about applies on anything. But as far as Leagues Cup, we are going to Philly, and the overriding sentiment is nothing changes. You know, Dean Smith said he's not going to change the tactics, or he's not going to play a bunch of subs. He's going to go out there and try to win it. He was asked, what's the value of Leagues Cup? He said, well, value is a chance to win a trophy. Ashley Westwood, same thing, said let's go win it. Dean's coached an FA Cup final. It looks like Carroll is going to stay as the starting striker over Patrick. Ashley talked about that being a challenge for Ajimong, yet one more challenge for Ajimong to, you know, that he's in his career. But I'm really excited about Leagues Cup. I know there's a lot of supporters clubs around the league have taken a stance of, well, we're boycotting Leagues Cup because our club didn't play in the U.S. Open Cup. I think that's a little short-sighted. The U.S. Open Cup controversies can all be a separate thing. I don't think you need to involve Leagues Cup in that. I think those are two, they're two totally separate tournaments, and MLS is pushing Leagues Cup, but and to the detriment of Open Cup. So I kind of get it, but like, what could go wrong with Leagues Cup? It's such an evolutionary thing, like a full league against another. You were talking about how like in Europe last episode, you said like you have the Champions League and the Europa and the Conference League, and that like pits like the tops of certain leagues against each other. But this is the only cup in the world that's like top to bottom of the entire league all faces each other. And I think that's really cool and really special. And it's new, but it's going to keep developing. And eventually this is going to be something that is really, really appreciated, I think, once it gets a little more history behind it. So let's go win the second one. Why not?
I love that point of view, and hearing you say that and talking about Karol Swiderski potentially playing striker for this club, you know, there was some reports this week about Hellas Verona still being interested in landing another loan deal for Karol Swiderski, bringing him back to Italy, and potentially, anyway, potentially signing him with this time a real obligation to buy. I know Hellas Verona is still interested in that. There's people at the club that have pushed back, but just from a timeline point of view, the European transfer window is now open, and it will be still open when League's Cup is over, I think.
Right, that should track. Yeah, that tracks.
So just when, if you want to kind of think about this, and the Premier League will close the transfer window at August 30th.
Okay.
I would like to see when Serie A's transfer window also closes on Friday, August 30th as well.
I think the League's Cup final is the 25th. So, yeah, there's a few days after.
Yeah, so I mean, I think that, you know, you have to consider at this point Karol Swiderski being an asset to the club, not just because of his play on the field, but because of his potential value off of it. So if, when you talk about winning a League's Cup, when you talk about this club going for it, you know, if Karol Swiderski starts at the number 9 position for Charlotte FC and takes Charlotte on a League's Cup run and scores 5 or 6 goals along the way, all of a sudden, we are towards the end of the window, right when we know Zoran Kroneta likes to get his business done. And when clubs around the world are a bit desperate to bring somebody on, I think when you reach the last 4 or 5 days of the transfer window, that's when you see a lot of deals get done. I think I saw a quote recently that said, deadlines get deals done. And I think that's what these deadlines are all about. So, is there a chance that Karol Swiderski plays unbelievably well during this League's Cup run and then gets sold at the end of it? Is that a possibility, do you think?
I think for sure. I think as far as Zoran's concerned, he would be happy to keep Karol, but he would be very happy to sell Karol. We've heard him say he's in the shopping window, didn't work out with Verona. I do think Verona's kind of trolling us by trying to get those rumors started again a little bit. I don't know what's up with Hellas Verona. It's kind of a not really a very accomplished club to be pulling that BS, but I definitely think Karol is still for sale. I think that's the reason. That's yet another reason. I think he would start over Patrick anyway, as far as because he's a veteran and Dean wants to, and he brings a little bit different quality on the ball than Patrick. Although, I mean, Patrick's great at creating his own chances, but he doesn't always have the best final third decision making once he's done that. So I think Carroll's veteranness would put him in the starting lineup anyway. But the fact that we kind of want to, like, we're happy to keep him, but we wouldn't mind selling him also still, I think that is another reason that he's starting and he's to be showcased. And that's why Dean Smith said when Carroll's on the pitch, he's our penalty taker, because you're just trying to rack up. You just want some European club to see him score, you know, like 6 goals in 3 weeks and decide to bite and take a chance. I think, I think it could go either way. I'm not, I'd be foolish to try to predict exactly what's going to happen. Those predictions don't usually always go that well for me when it comes to Karol Swiderski. So I think either way it could go, but there's no way that what I will say is it's, the club is not like fully committed to him. They're happy to keep him, but they wouldn't mind selling him also. I'm pretty sure about that, just from the way I read the tea leaves.
For what it's worth, I know some people that cover the team here locally did reach out to the club for comment after that report was mentioned, which, by the way, I think that the report about Hellas Verona being interested in Karol Swiderski again is totally legitimate. I've seen reports from that Polish news outlet before.
Yeah.
And I've seen quality reporting from the original reporter that mentioned the deal, who I believe, I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's got over 300,000 followers on Twitter.
Yeah, he wouldn't just be putting nonsense out there for no sake. Let me ask you this question. What What do you think about the take that, oh, Charlotte FC doesn't want to deal with Verona because they don't think Verona acts in good faith? Like, I kind of get that, but I also think it's not, it's just about money. If the price is right, they're not going to be like, oh, we're not selling to you because we don't like you, right? I mean, it's all about the price.
Yeah, I think that was a well-cooked up statement by the right. PR team for sure.
Right.
And a way to just kind of settle things down, because here's the fact of the matter. This is the reality about this situation. I've followed clubs before, and nothing is worse than a transfer saga that drags out over months, sometimes years.
Mm-hmm.
And those things happen. And I don't care who you are, you got to look in the mirror and realize that's exactly what's happening at Charlotte FC right now. This transfer saga for Karol Swiderski is going on now for almost a year, maybe a little bit more, and that is now part of this club, and it's not going anywhere because you can't just take away what Karol Swiderski and this organization has said in the past. You just have to accept the fact that Karol Swiderski wants to play in a better league. He wants to play in Europe. And right now, he's playing at Charlotte because he's trying to stay match fit, and he's doing the job that is being asked of him to do. He's being a professional about it, and that's good.
Right.
I'm gaining a lot of respect for Karol Swiderski for coming back here and playing. And for that, I will give him nothing but praise. But if he still wants to go play in a top five European league, and he thinks that he can do so in the year of 2024 and 2025, more power to him. It doesn't bother me at all. It will continue to bother me if we have to do this for another year.
Yeah. And in 10 years, we're going to be looking back and be like, remember in the early days of the club when we had that guy Swiderski, and it was just always about will he stay or will he go? You know, it's definitely going to be, like you said, part of the fabric of the club as we remember it. I think I also think this is, again, this is a prediction. You can take it for what it's worth. But I think if he is to go, if he does leave here in this window, it's not going to be something that, like, gets leaked early and then takes a few days to be finalized. I think it's just going to be like you wake up one morning and he's gone. You know, like, I don't think it's going to be – I think it'll be sudden but expected, you know, if it is to happen. I don't think there's going to be a lot of, oh, this club has expressed an interest and we might do it, and then 2 days later it's finalized. I don't think it's going to go like that. I think it's just going to be like – as soon as they get the offer that they like, they're going to accept it. They're going to report it. They're going to send him on his way. So we'll see. Because we have Ajumong waiting in the wings to just step right back in the starting lineup. So.
Yeah. And that's good. And that's okay. I think somebody asked me recently about Patrick Ajumong and what we've thought about his performance so far this year. And I was just like, hey, you know, Pat's done everything that's been asked of him. Oh, which reminds me, there's a striker that's being rumored to be signed by Charlotte FC. Is that a real report?
Yes. Yeah. Let me look up, because he has a name that is a little bit difficult for me to remember. I think it's Toklamadi. Idan Toklamadi, Israeli, 19-year-old playing on the Olympic team with Liel Abada, and from all accounts, he seems to be ready to come over. He's a number nine. Plays for a club in the Israeli league, plays for Maccabi Petah Tikva. I don't know much about that club. I don't know much about the Israeli league, but I did check out his highlight video, which was pretty impressive, playing against what you would probably consider a little bit lower than MLS competition. Again, 19 years old. We need to watch him. He apparently left the Olympic camp to go take a medical in London to make sure that he was good to complete this transfer. Supposedly the price is around $3.4 million, which maybe is an overpay based on, you know, transfer market had his market value at like 1.7 or something like that. So who knows? Transfer market's not always the most reliable on those figures. The kid looks okay. And it's for a few, like, Israeli sources reported it. And then Tom Bogert also confirmed that it was very close to being done. So who knows exactly where that's going to land. But Idan Toklamadi looks like someone who could come in. And if we were to sell Carroll, put Patrick back in the starting lineup, then this kid becomes the super sub. Who knows if he would be a U22 initiative signing, I think. So I don't think he would go to Crown Legacy necessarily if we were to get him, but maybe he would. We kind of did something similar with Petkovic last year. And I don't know. I like I said, I liked the highlight video that I saw on YouTube. I don't really know much else about him, but I know that he is someone who would probably play striker, maybe could go out to the wing. But I think we're pretty good on wingers with Abada, Tavares, Vargas, and Diagra. So, yeah, the idea of getting a signing in would be nice. It'd be nice to sign somebody, right? I mean, the window's been open for almost 10 days now.
Toke Lamadi is on the Israeli Olympic team, but was not in the squad.
Right, because he was getting his medical, apparently, for the transfer. But he's going back. So he should play their second game.
Yeah, so it's pretty easy to read these leaves and just kind of see what's happening for sure. That Charlotte FC is pretty close to signing this player. And it's so fascinating to me because I think it continues a trend that sporting director Zoran Crneta has set here with the club. That once he signs somebody from somewhere, he usually gets somebody else from that same place.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And our sister club in Serbia, FC Kukarici, who we've signed one player from them and sent three others to them. So, yeah, it's like Zoran definitely likes to deal with things he knows for sure.
Well, and just you mentioned that, but also Polish players as well.
Yeah.
That Karol Szczerski was signed, and then all of a sudden there was three or four Poles signed. On the heels of that, Liel Abada, the Israeli, is signed. Toke Lamadi, all of a sudden, potentially coming in here, another Israeli that knows Liel Abada. It's very interesting. I think it's fascinating. And Zoran Crneta potentially looking towards the future at the striker position. 19 years old is not 23. Patrick Ajimang is 23 years old. And Karol Szczerski, I believe, is 28 or 29.
Yep.
And I think what that does is it maybe like it helps fill out that striker depth. It gives you a young prospect to potentially look at it, that striker position over the next 2 or 3 years. I think it could be an interesting signing. And and it's always exciting when you bring a striker into the club.
Yeah. I mean, goals make the game, and if this is a guy who can come in and score some goals, whether it's off the bench or fighting his way into a starting position, we'd love to see it.
Is he going to play for – well, I'm not asking you as if you would know, but it just seems to me like it'd be somebody like and I don't know how that money works, right? When we signed Petkovic, he was designated to Crown Legacy for a year.
Yep.
And what I understand is that this is going to be an under-22 initiative signing.
Okay. Yes, that's according to Tom Bogert, yes.
So that, even though my gut tells me that that means this could end up being a Crown Legacy player, an under-22 initiative signing probably should be featuring in the first team lineup.
Right. Right. That's what Kerwin Vargas was when he first came
lineup,
up, right?
Not starting lineup in the first team squad.
I agree, and we'll get a better look at this guy, Toke Lamadi, on Saturday at 1:00 Eastern. Israel is playing against Paraguay in the Olympics. Toke Lamadi should be back for that match, and Israel, I think they lost their first match, if I'm not mistaken. Excuse me, they had a draw against Mali in their first match, so they're trying to get out of group, and my eyes will be on that match at 1:00 on Saturday. As I get ready for the Charlotte at Philly Leagues Cup match, I will definitely hopeful to see some flashes of what Toke Lamadi can bring for that Israeli side, for sure.
Well, I'll tell you what I'll be pulling for. I will certainly be pulling for the Paraguay under-23 team.
to get Abada back as quickly as possible.
Yeah,
I'm glad Liel's getting to go to Paris, but I don't really rate the Olympics that much.
No, that's not about rating the Olympics or not. I just don't think Israel's going to do anything at the end of the day. I don't think Israel's going to win a medal. Therefore, you might as well just get him back home as soon as possible. I hope he's enjoying it, of course. What a great opportunity to go play in the Olympics. But if Israel fails to medal and Liel Abada comes back to Charlotte sooner rather than later and can help this team potentially win its first trophy in this year's edition of Leagues Cup, then there's nothing wrong with that. I think that benefits the club, and that's what we're in this for. as much as we want to see these players have success with other squads, especially, you know, at their national team. It's always good to see players play well for their national team. But I think we all want to see Leo Abada lift a trophy in Charlotte, black and blue.
Yes, for sure. I'm 100% on the same page.
It's been a good episode. It's been a fun episode. It's great to hear about your travels. Great to hear about the nice time that you had in Austin and the fantastic support that Charlotte FC had there. I'm not sure what type of support we're going to have on Saturday night in Philadelphia for this opening match of League's Cup. But I know there'll be a ton of support here in Charlotte on Wednesday the 31st against Cruz Azul. There'll probably be a lot of Cruz Azul fans.
Yeah, there will be.
In the house on Wednesday. Maybe, you know, I'd like to think that there'd be more on a Saturday, but I'm interested to see what Cruz Azul can show us on a Wednesday if that fan base shows up to the Fortress on Wednesday. It could make for really fun Cup night at the stadium, which is always something to look forward to, isn't it?
It very much so. And if we take care of business against Philly, I know you and Brackett had said get at least a draw against Philly. I'd like to see us beat Philly and then be playing to advance against Cruz Azul on that Wednesday. Cruz Azul is very popular, very successful club in Mexico. As Daniel said last I listened to this whole episode, John. I'm pulling all the details. You guys did a really good job. But he said this is not Necaxa. You know, this is not like Necaxa is like bottom dwellers of Liga MX, and Cruz Azul is like champions of Liga MX. So it's a whole different ball game for us as far as that level of competition. They got Georgios Yakomakis, the Atlanta striker who has burned us before in the past, is now playing for Cruz Azul. That's, he's scoring goals for them already as they start their season. The one advantage we have is that we're in mid-season form, and this is the beginning of the season for the Mexican League team. So we hope that can help us out a little bit. You saw in last year's League's Cup, not a lot of Mexican teams went that deep because of that reason. It's kind of the reverse of what CONCACAF Champions Cup is, where we're starting – MLS teams are all starting their season while Mexican teams are in the heart of their season. So hopefully we can get a little bit of a advantage of that. But it's going to be a great night. It's going to be a great cup night on Wednesday, and hopefully it's to win the group in advance. That'd be awesome. I'll be there.
Charlotte Soccer Show. He's Daniel Bramlett. I'm John Hayes. It's always a pleasure. Make sure you follow us on Twitter at For the Crown Baby. Make sure you follow us on Instagram, Charlotte Soccer City. Danny Bram's always cooking up some fantastic reels for you to enjoy on Instagram. And, of course, the shorts here on YouTube as well. Great work on those, Danny. Great coverage of the match over the weekend. It's a pleasure to see you, and I'll look forward to hanging out with you over the next week and watching these Charlotte FC League's Cup matches and kind of see where this all plays out. It's kind of fun to take a break in the middle of the season and play for a different competition. I still think I would prefer a staggered competition throughout the season, but here we are. It's a break, and we're going to play in a new competition over the next month, and then two big MLS games on the backside in about 28-29 days or so. So until next time, as always, Danny Brown. For the crown, baby.
It's for the crown, baby.